You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Boy, a lot going on in the world. It seems like this has been the summer of insane news. I mean, it's just like one thing after the other. We've got a Meet Your Texas State Representative coming up a little later on. The surveillance state is in the news. The Electronic Freedom Foundation looks like Mr. Snowden has helped them out a little in their attempt to penetrate the state's secrets defense. We'll tell you all about that. Apple has just lost a case under the Sherman Antitrust Act. Who would have imagined? My Cat Higgins, I've got a question about you for him. Rand Paul's got a new racist problem. And on top of all of this, John Wohlstetter, a senior fellow with the Discovery Institute and national security expert, attorney and author of Sleepwalking with the Bomb, discovery.org, of course, is their website, is of the opinion that the Obama administration, if I have this correct, this is the publicist pitch, Discovery Institute senior fellow, national security expert, author and attorney John Wohlstetter explains the frightened motives behind the Obama administration's decision to appease Islamists, even at the expense of allies. John, welcome to the program.
Tom, glad to be with you and your audience.
Thank you. When, where, how, under what circumstances, I don't get this. I do not see this administration. Well, first of all, let's define terms. By Islamists, are you talking about people like Osama bin Laden, or the late Osama bin Laden and his buddies, who think that it's appropriate to kill people in the name of religion, or their Christian variations who blow up the Olympics and kill people in the name of religion? Or are you talking about people who are simply evangelical and think that their religion should be running the government, like all the Christians who come forward and say this is a Christian nation?
Well, by Islamist, I'm referring to, and obviously in the case of bin Laden, who arranged the murder of 3,000 people on American soil, he gave it an entirely proper response. He gave him the kind of medicine he deserved. But I have in mind leaders of and their factions who lead certain nations in the Middle East. In particular, I have in mind the leaders in Iran after the fraudulent election in 2009, when instead of siding and putting pressure on the regime, he stayed aloof, allowed the regime to crush the rebellion in the hopes that he could negotiate a nuclear accord, which had, I think, no plausible chance to succeed in Egypt. Mubarak was headed on the way out after 30 years of rule, but he pushed for prompt elections.
He being Obama.
Yeah, President Obama.
So, hang on just a second, John. First of all, in Iran, the guy who was just recently elected ran on a secular slate rather than an Islamist slate.
No. All of the seven candidates in the election that was just held in Iran were pre-selected by the Assembly of Experts. It's an 86-member body.
Yeah, and this was the most secular of the bunch.
No, but none of them should be thought secular like we are. They're all approved by the regime, and none of them are reformers in the sense that we would understand.
Okay.
He supports the nuclear policy.
Are you suggesting that if we had a president elected here in the United States who said that he was a Christian, he was going to allow Christianity to inform his values, he would, in fact, even start a war and refer to it as a crusade, as George W. Bush did, that for instance, Hindu India would be justified in coming in and taking out George W. Bush because they have to protect the world from fundamentalist Christianity. We don't want any more Tim McVeighs.
Well, I think you're conflating very different things because the Islamist threat is a much broader and deeper threat than any of the and the Christian evangelicals, with the rare exception of nutcases like McVeigh, are not people who are engaged in a global and violent jihad.
That's true of Muslims, too. With the exception of the occasional nutcase, most Muslims are just normal, ordinary people who want to have a decent paycheck and they want their kids to go to school.
Well, except that they elect Islamists like Mohammed Morsi to power, who is called Jews, Apes, and Pigs, and who wants the release of the blind
and his own
sheep.
People kicked him out.
Well,
They don't want an Islamist in charge. They want a secular government.
Well,
how is this different from what happened in Massachusetts in the decade before the American Revolution?
Tom, I would not assume that they are going to have a secularist government in Egypt. They are still a minority of the population. The reason that they kicked him out after a year is because his gross economic mismanagement has got the country immiserated. In ways that were unimaginable even to Egyptians a year ago. And in Turkey also, Erdogan has over the 10 years virtually dismantled the Ataturk secularist republic, and he has brought in militant Islam to the point where you had demonstrations by the seculars in protest back in the spring.
These guys are all playing proxy wars with Egypt right now. On the other hand, you've got Saudi Arabia that very much wants a secular nation. They've been arming the military over in fact they just committed $8 billion to the military in Egypt because they don't want an Islamist republic. They want a secular republic on their border.
But the secularists in Egypt are not a majority, and they're not as well organized as the Islamists, and it's far from clear where this is headed.
So what's our dog in this game, John? Why are you suggesting that, or what? First of all, what are you suggesting we should be doing?
Well, at this point we have very little leverage with Egypt. I think it would be a mistake to cut off aid at this point. Our dog in each of these countries should be the same, to prevent an Islamist jihadist leader from coming to power and extending influence throughout the region.
But wouldn't our doing that simply cause that to happen? I mean, if Mexico and Canada engaged in a conspiracy to prevent Ralph Reed from becoming president of the United States, I'm guessing most Americans would go out and vote for him.
Look, what I'm saying prevent, I don't mean we go over there and organize a coup, but we can try to provide some support for those secular and modernist elements.
But the more we do that, they perceive us as meddling in their internal affairs and they get PO'd at us.
Well, but the other side is going to provide support, and if we don't, it's a stacked deck, and the people we would like to win will not prevail.
No, if we don't, they might look at us and say, you know, hey, maybe minding your own business is a good policy. We should follow that.
But our adversaries, people like the Iranians and others are going to provide support for the Islamists, whether we support the secularists or not.
You're conflating the people with the government. John Kennedy, back in 1963, spoke to this issue of separating government from people and having policies based on recognizing the people. This is only 6 seconds long. Just listen to this.
No government or social system is so evil that its people must be considered as lacking in virtue.
Very simple. I mean, and this was part of, if you go look it up, it was his June 10th, 1963 speech on peace, where he repeatedly, over and over and over again, called for world peace and for U.S. non-intervention in the world.
Well, except that during the Kennedy years, after all, John Kennedy said this, and yet we do know that he certainly tried to do something about Fidel Castro in Cuba.
Right.
The thing is,
but he didn't try to take out the Cuban people. He didn't say, firebomb Havana.
Well, no, he obviously did not want to do that, and that's why, along with
but George Bush did that. He did that in Iraq and Afghanistan, and all we've got for it is a lousy T-shirt and a lot of blowback.
Well, look, we went into Afghanistan because terrorists that were housed there, that were in bed with the Taliban government, came here.
The Taliban offered to give us bin Laden.
Actually, we were offered bin Laden not by the Taliban, but by Hassan al-Turabi in 1996 when al-Qaeda was no more than 100 people.
No, in 2001, 2 days after 9/11, Mullah Omar offered, he didn't get offered to us, he said he will arrest Osama bin Laden and give him to a third party for trial.
Well,
Bush said, no, I want to bomb your country.
That was not credible, and we were offered by Hassan al-Turabi.
Hang on just a second, John. Hold on.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I'm sorry, that guy steps on both of us. John Wallstetter, okay. You can read all about it over at discovery.org. John, thanks for being with us today.
Tom, thanks for having me. Lively debate. Thank you.
Indeed. Good talking with you. It's Viagra for your brain. The Tom Hartman program does not, however, lead to stiff thinking. Don't tell Limbaugh, though. He'll want some. In any case, here's my take on this whole idea that we need to be running around the world controlling other people's countries and other people's destinies because we don't like the religion or we don't like their policies or whatever. That's called empire. You know, when one country basically controls most of the rest of the world, that's called empire. And the American empire is unraveling before our very eyes. Yesterday, the Brazilian newspaper O Globo revealed that our National Security Agency's spying program extends all the way to Latin America. It's not just the G whatever, the number of the, you know, G8, G10, G12. And it's not just you and me. It's Latin America. Basing their report on a set of documents provided by whistleblower Edward Snowden. Hello, he's letting the South Americans know what we're up to. Could he be headed there? Anyhow, that newspaper in Brazil showed that the NSA has recorded the telephone calls, communications, and electronic data of the citizens and officials of countries including Venezuela, Brazil, Colombia, and Mexico. Even more concerning, the NSA has focused its Latin American spying operations on those nations' gas and energy industries using a program codenamed Boundless Informant. For Venezuelans, Mexicans, and Brazilians, those revelations were shocking and angering. But, you know, they really shouldn't be surprising. Because we're an empire. And that's the problem. Like all empires, from the Romans to the Spanish to the British. To maintain an empire, you got to maintain control over other countries, especially countries that can provide essential natural resources like, Venezuela's oil. Sometimes the empire keeps control over countries by invading them, sometimes by economic bribery, other times by supporting covert actions against foreign governments, the way Reagan did with the Contras in the 80s. Other times, like the old Global report shows, the empire preserves its power by winning the information game, by spying, snooping on Mexican gas executives and Brazilian bureaucrats. It's just another way that our empire keeps itself on top of the global throne. This is how empires work. Constant warfare, foreign adventures, spy games. By directly and indirectly controlling much of the world, an empire can ensure a steady supply of all those natural resources and the strategic alliances that they need to stay on top. Empires, in a sense, are predators. They're actually parasites. They suck the marrow out of the bones of everyone else in order to grow and thrive. But in the end, if you look at the history of global empires, the British, the Romans, the Spanish, the Aztecs, the Greeks, eventually they fail. And they fail because they're empires. Those very things that make a country an empire have their own built-in limitations that end up bringing the empire down. Let me give you some examples. It is pretty damn expensive to keep building military bases all over the world. It's very expensive to go to war every decade or so. It's very expensive to fund the institutions that direct and manage the imperial war machine and its spy apparatus. Eventually, empires just are crushed by the weight of their own empire. Empires aren't fragile, by the way, just because they cost a lot. Another one of their weaknesses is that the very tactics that they use to keep themselves in power end up inciting other countries to rebel against them. The British learned this in their experience with us. Remember that? I mean, you don't remember that, but you read about that, right? 1773, Boston Tea Party, 1776, Declaration of Independence, and on it went. British learned about that with India. Mahatma Gandhi said, no, hell no, we won't go. We're going to spin our own cotton. We're going to make our own salt. The desire for self-determination is like a core fact of human nature. And that's why empires always, in the end, by their very presence, by the way that they run, invite backlash from the countries that they essentially occupy or manipulate. And for you and me, for Americans, the worst part of our imperial power posture is that maintaining empire funnels resources away from our problems here at home. I mean, look around you. Roads, bridges, water, or water treatment systems are crumbling. Our cell phone service is spotty. I just had a phone call a minute ago with Louise in my doctor's office, AT&T. Bing! Oh, call failed. Guess what? Our broadband is among the slowest and most expensive in the developed world. Even our trains, they're state-of-the-art for the 19th century, but they're a joke compared to those of Europe, Japan, South Korea, China. Why? Because we're moving more and more of our national resources into empire and shredding in the process our social safety net and our education systems. Our country faces all kinds of really important problems, and none of them are going to be solved by building another military base in Japan or snooping on Mexican oil executives. We need to be taking the money and talent that we are now using to prop up our declining empire and putting that money to work rebuilding America, revitalizing our economy, rejuvenating our middle class. I mean, this history proves this. The Romans, the Spanish, the British, the Aztecs, the Incas, you name the empire, the Greeks, they grew powerful by military conquest, foreign adventurism. Eventually, they all overextended themselves, weakening their own foundations, and in the end, they all fell. Now, some fell really badly. Others, like the British, who ended their empire after World War I, made a reasonable transition from empire to nationhood. We should learn from that example and draw down our empire before it's too late, before we've collapsed into a pit we can't get out of. Let's end the empire and put America and Americans first.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And I think this is something that is transpartisan. I think there's a lot of conservatives, certainly a lot of libertarians, a lot of Republicans who are saying, why are we wasting all this money overseas? Welcome back to the True People's Media, the Tom Hartman Program. I got to tell you, here in Washington, D.C., it's like every now and then, like, really cool stuff happens in this city that has nothing to do with Congress. Believe it or not. I've lived here in Washington, D.C. for what will be, I think, 3 years in, it's either the fall or the spring. Either 3 years this fall or 3 years next spring. Maybe longer. Let's see, we lived in the apartment for a year and a half, and we've been living on the boat for 2 years. Whatever. Anyway, I've been living here for a while. And, you know, I haven't paid a whole lot of attention to local politics. But this is really interesting. The city council has before them, and they're going to, in all probability, vote on this today. So we will find out tomorrow if they bowed to Walmart's pressure. But they have a law before them that says that if you are a store with corporate sales of over $1 billion, okay, over $1 billion, and your storefront is over 75,000 square feet, then you got to pay your workers at least $10.25 an hour. Which is, by the way, what the minimum wage was in 1968, inflation adjusted. And Walmart says, if you pass that law, we are going to stop. Well, they're building three Walmarts in D.C. right now. They say, we're going to leave town. To which I say, great. I mean, there's a lot of locally owned businesses in Washington, D.C. It's one of those few places where there's actually still some locally owned companies, locally owned stores. I love it about D.C. that there are so many small, funky kind of boutique stores of all different kinds. And if Walmart comes in, it's going to be the death of a lot of them. But the bigger picture here is, I mean, the six Walmart heirs have more wealth among them than the bottom 41% of Americans. Six people. They get all that money from the Walmart business model. The Walmart business model is basically pay your employees so little that your payroll, your employees, your payroll is subsidized by the taxpayers. So you and I are enabling Walmart to pay their employees so little because we give their, you and I are giving Walmart employees all over the country, obviously not all of them, but you know, enough to be significant. I mean, we're talking lots and lots of dollars here. You and I are giving the Walmart employees food stamps. You and I are giving Walmart employees Medicaid. You and I are providing Walmart employees with other forms of welfare and benefits and child, you know, aid for dependent children and things like that, so that Walmart can take the money that they're saving because you and I are picking up the tab, and they can give it to their stockholders, which includes the six Waltonaires who have a combined fortune. If they were one person, they'd be the richest person in the world. They're paying their executives millions of dollars. They're throwing off tens of thousands of dollars in profit every single minute of every single day. And they say, "Oh yeah, we can't afford to pay people $10.25 an hour." Well, right down the street, Costco, which is unionized, is paying what, 13, 14, something like that. A decent wage. Walmart is like, "No. Can't do it. That's not our business model. Our business model is to soak it to the taxpayers." It's amazing. Uh-oh. In less than 24 hours, the corporation has already seen results. Some council members who voted for the living wage bill are now balking. Council member Kenyon McDuffie says he's going to have to give this some thought because he voted yes without knowing Walmart was going to pull out. Oh, excuse me. Did I say it was $10.25 an hour? It's $12.50 an hour is the new minimum wage here in D.C. if you are over $1 billion in revenue and 75,000 square feet. $12.50 an hour. The average Costco worker makes $21.96 an hour. That's damn good. Walmart currently pays 28% less on average than other large retailers and has a $450 billion a year profit. It's more than $1 billion a day in profits. Amazing. Just amazing. Let me just say, before I go any farther, my opinion on this, very simply. You can just boil it, you cut through all the morality and all the everything else, but very simple. If your business model does not allow you to pay your workers a decent wage and give them decent benefits, then it shouldn't exist. You shouldn't have the right to do business in the United States, or the privilege. There is no right. You should not have the privilege to do business. And that's what the city fathers in Washington, D.C. are saying. So we'll see if the mayor vetoes the bill, or we'll see if the city council calls for another vote. We'll see if Walmart sufficiently terrifies them. And I'll fill you in tomorrow on what happened. Okay, all that said, Wayne in Granby, Massachusetts, listening to WHMP. Hey, Wayne, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to comment about the guy you had at the top of the show.
Mm-hmm.
When the heck are we going to stop trying to be the ugly American and get involved in anybody else's business in the entire world? We've got to have learned by now that we can barely take care of our own business.
You would
think. We've had to suffer through Vietnam and then all the Islam stuff, and we haven't made a friend at all.
Yeah. And in fact, you could argue that there would be no Al-Qaeda if we hadn't helped form it when we were messing with inside Afghanistan back in the 70s to try and bleed the Soviets dry.
And exactly. By the way, can I ask one favor?
Sure.
I am currently reading your Unequal Protection that I got out of the library. It's a signed copy. Mm-hmm. Is there any way I have to give it back? Is there any way to wangle a signed copy from you? I know I'm a rotten guy.
Oh, Wayne. You know, if I were to say yes and give that to you right now, it would be a really, really bad precedent. So what I will say is you need to just, you know, call periodically. We are giving away a book every day, and it's up to Shano. He does the best book of the day, and you're going to have to impress Shane with a brilliant question, Wayne. I'm sorry.
I'll tell you what, it's a scary book.
It's a good book. Yeah, thank you for the kind words about it, but you know, it just wouldn't work. Wayne, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Preston in Denver, listening on AM 760, Denver's progressive voice. Hey, Preston, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I wanted to mention that Walmart has also been moving into other countries like Mexico, where they've opened hundreds of stores and have wiped out their Main Street type businesses.
Yep.
I think has contributed to the economic dislocation that and NAFTA and these other so-called free trade agreements have caused.
Yep.
And I also wanted to say, I just reposted a wonderful photo that I found of you from your Facebook page. You were with Jeremy Scahill just as he launched his book tour for Dirty Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, I just saw the documentary film based on that book, and it's
shocking,
heartbreaking, yeah, enlightening, infuriating, and speaks to the need to transition from our warfare state to a welfare state, taking care of people, the healthcare,
yeah,
the education, the water systems, the public education, so much that we can grow from, move towards, you know, have it be sustainable for a change. I don't know if you ever saw Michael Moore's video when he visited Norway, but I think that gives a great example of how, you know, of just a society is possible, and how joyful as well.
Yeah, we did our show from Denmark for either a week or 2 weeks.
Great.
Back 2-3 years ago, and a couple things amazed me. One was a group of Americans. They call themselves Americans Abroad, I think it is. There's these groups all over the country, all over the world. And a couple hundred American citizens who live and work in Denmark, or who had married Danish women and just chosen to live there, you know, for the rest of their lives or for some time. I didn't realize they were listening to our show, and we just, you know, opened it up, and they showed up. I mean, there was this big party we had,
right.
But I get conservatives on the air all the time, so I said to the. We hired a Danish producer. She was a producer with Danish radio, and we just hired her for the week to help us bring guests on, because, you know, Sean's Rolodex is not quite that large. And we had conservative after conservative after conservative, and I kept saying to them, so you're a conservative here in Denmark, you must want to do away with national health care. And they're like, no, are you crazy? And say, oh, you must want to do away with unemployment insurance. No, are you crazy? Subsidized housing? No, are you nuts? The minimum wage, which is like $16 an hour. No, are you nuts? Well, what makes you a conservative? We don't want any more immigrants. That was the only thing. It was amazing. Preston, thank you for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
It's amazing when the conservatives in the well-developed countries of the world, you know, are to the left of our liberals. Welcome back to the place where despair is not an option. Somebody writes in, my wife and I listened to your shows on Sirius Satellite Radio. Last week you discussed your cat's iodine level. This is over the TomHartman.com message board. Your cat's iodine level problems and hyperthyroid issues. You said you'd begin to reduce the iodine levels in your cat's diet, plus you mentioned some kind of medication or vitamin that was recommended by your vet. I was driving in heavy traffic that day. Can you let me know? We're having the same problem with our 18-year-old cat, who we love dearly. Would appreciate a reply. We hope Higgins is doing better, Bob and Gail. Thank you, Bob and Gail, for the nice note and for posting on our message board over at TomHartman.com. And here's the latest on Higgins. The vets apparently have a hard time differentiating between hyperthyroidism, which is an overactive thyroid, which kind of controls the motor. You know, it's like the whole metabolism runs too fast because Higgins has been losing weight and throwing up and acting like an obsessive cat. He sits in front of the bathroom and just meow, 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 meow for like hours. And then you open the door, and all he does, he runs into the shower, and he stands underneath the water and meows until you turn the water on him. And then he drinks until he's like, you know, just like had too much to drink. He's like, it's weird. I mean, he's always been that way, but he's never been that way to the point of it's almost his exclusive focus. He is getting old. He doesn't hear very well. He doesn't see very well. But it's like something going on. So anyhow, they said either it's a kidney problem or it's hyperthyroid. It sure looks like it's the thyroid. Put him on the diet first. We put him on the diet, and that lasted like 4 or 5 days. And then he really didn't like the cat food, and he wasn't eating it, and he's still losing weight. So then we went to plan B, starting day before yesterday, which is giving Higgins some kind of a medication. And I'm sorry, I don't know the name of it, and probably wouldn't be a good idea to put it out anyway, because this is a conversation you should be having with a vet rather than a talk show host. And that medication apparently suppresses the thyroid activity or the uptake of iodine. And if that makes him better, then we know that it's a thyroid problem, and then they can give him some radioactive iodine, which burns away part of the thyroid, and he becomes a normal cat again. And if this doesn't solve his problem, then that might mean he's got a kidney problem, which is a really scary thing, because cats don't live really long when they get really bad kidney problems. So we'll keep you up to date on that. So that's where we're at. But we started him out on this prescription, and you have to get the prescription from your vet, cat food that has no kelp in it. It has no iodine in it. And we're still feeding him that, although he's not all that happy about it. But we're giving him the medication, too, to see how everything goes. So if anybody knows more about this than I do, feel free to call. And, you know, Louise actually said, you know, maybe some of our listeners have suggestions. Because, you know, we'd like our cat to stick around. Higgins is a very important member of our family. As each one of our kids, we have three children, and as each one grew up and moved out, we got another cat. So we have three cats now. But, you know, Higgins was the first. And not the first cat we ever had, but I had a dog from the time I was born until our dog Sabra died about a decade ago. But since then, we've been living on the water, and dogs living on the water is just not that great idea, because if they fall off the dock, they can't get back up, whereas cats can. They can claw their way. In fact, Higgins has fallen in the water and gotten back out. He wasn't happy, but he got back out. In fact, he was seriously upset. August in San Antonio, Texas. Hey, August, what's on your mind?
Well, I was listening to what you said about how basically the taxpayer is subsidizing the average Walmart employee.
Not the average Walmart employee. They subsidize the average Walmart CEO, stockholder, and billionaire. The employees are the ones who are getting screwed.
If they're getting food stamps and other things like that, that basically it's helping Walmart keep their costs down.
That's correct.
And there, you know, the thing is that what I wanted to add to that is that basically if you look around the country, you'll see just this pile of abandoned Walmarts, all right? And every one of them, if you listen to the news in their areas, when they built them, they get a tax abatement, you know, for so many years or whatever.
Yep.
Okay? And because they're bringing in jobs.
Right.
It's
in quotes.
Argument.
Yes.
In quotes. Yes. I thank you. I actually did that just now.
Air quotes.
So
yeah. There you go.
Yeah. So basically, you know, and then what happens? That, you know, 5 years down the road, 6 years down the road, 10 years down the road, they basically say, oh, well, we need to expand. Oh, by the way, we need a tax abatement because we're going to be bringing in this many jobs when we build this new super center. And they do it again and again and again and
right.
again. I mean, I don't even know what percentage of their property taxes they're actually paying. I'll bet it's in the 25%, you know, because basically years and years, every one of their buildings is basically exempt from property.
Yeah, Robert Greenwald did the story on this, and we should probably get him on to talk about it. It was a couple of years ago he produced a video, which I'm sure you can find over at bravenewfilms.org, and you could probably easily Google it. There's probably a version of it, if not on his website, but it may even be on YouTube. But it's called The High Cost of Low Prices, and it is the story of how Walmart basically gets all the taxpayers to subsidize their billionaires. And, you know, spot on, August. Yeah, you nailed it. So, check out Robert Greenwald's documentary, The High Cost of Low Prices, and it's all there. Thank you for the call. Excellent point. Vi in Donovan, Missouri. Hey, Vi, what's up?
Hey, Tom, I was just calling to say kudos to your rant on Empire,
mm-hmm.
ending the Empire.
Thank you.
But I think at the same time we have to be careful and not just become like a turtle in a shell. I still think that foreign aid, that with emphasis on the humane things, the welfare things, your earlier call.
Yeah, the number one and two countries in the world in terms of, on a per capita basis, the foreign aid that they give, and this may not be the current one for this year. It's been a couple of years since I saw the stat, but they used to be Norway and Japan. Neither one of them are empires.
Right. I think like it's either 1.5 or 1% of our total budget is going toward foreign aid now.
That's correct.
People think that it's huge, a huge amount, but it's not.
No, it's a very small amount. And it's and much of it is strategic. I mean, the two largest recipients of foreign aid, and it's in the billions, are Egypt and Israel.
Yeah, right, so. And that's military aid. I'm talking more, I'm not talking about military aid. I think our foreign aid ought to have an emphasis on doing humane things. Educating young women.
Yeah.
If you can educate young women, you can really do amazing things to a society.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part. I absolutely agree, Vi. Very well said. Pardon the burp from our automation system there. Thank you for the call. You're absolutely right. We should be building schools for girls around the world.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Well, somebody called. I mentioned Higgins in the last little bit, and somebody called and said that they couldn't stay and go on the air, but they said same thing happened to my cat, and we gave him the radioactive iodine. We had to stay away from him for a week because he was radioactive, because the half-life of radioactive iodine is like a week. And he lived to 18. He lived to a ripe old age, and all was well. So hopefully that will be the case with Higgins. Although Shano and Jim and I were just speculating about this, we got a lot of spiders on the boat. We don't have fleas. But what if a spider bites Higgins while Higgins is radioactive, and then the spider is radioactive, and then the spider bites me or Louise? Do we turn into the Hulk or into Spider-Man or something? I mean, could a Marvel action hero? Does Higgins turn into, it's Higgins' cat. That's a scary thought, actually. I mean, he's thought of himself that way his entire life. This is a cat who was raised with a pit bull in a frat house. Anyhow, we'll see how it all shakes out. It's going to be an interesting time. I'm just checking the Washington Post homepage. The city council here in D.C. has not yet apparently voted on the living wage bill. But Walmart has made their threat. Talk about a corporate bully. It's amazing. Meanwhile, the so-called Americans for Prosperity, it's actually they should just call themselves what they are. This is, you know, one of the charities, in quotes, that the Koch brothers support big time. Why don't they just call themselves Prosperous Americans? I mean, Americans for Prosperity, okay, we get it. You're all about being rich. The Americans for Prosperity are running this TV ad, and it is so full of factual errors that it is startling. I mean, it is just absolutely startling. Here's the ad. This is the new, you know, Koch brothers and friends attempt to take down Obamacare.
2 years ago, my son Caleb began having seizures. The medical care he received meant the world to me. Now, I'm paying more attention, and I have some questions about Obamacare. If we can't pick our own doctor, how do I know my family's going to get the care they need? And what am I getting in exchange for higher premiums and a smaller paycheck? Can I really trust the folks in Washington with my family's health care? I think we all deserve some answers.
Well, number one, nobody's going to pick your doctor for him. You can pick your doctor. Caleb's going to be just fine. Number two, without Obamacare, your health insurance company, Aetna, United Health, whatever it may be, they could say, you know, that Caleb kid of yours, he has a pre-existing condition. We're not going to renew your insurance policy next year. But with Obamacare, at least he has access to insurance. And number three, higher premiums, really? If you make less than $80,000 a year, you're going to see your premiums go down to as much as zero. So, anyhow, I find it mind-boggling, the lies and misinformation that people are putting out about this stuff. Just blows my mind. Mary in Seattle. Hey, Mary, what's on your mind today?
Hey, I just wanted to honor my friend Jada May, who ran for president, mayor, and sheriff in Oregon. She came up with a great concept called Demo Publicans. It takes both wings to fly mentality.
Uh-huh.
So Demo Publicans, and then and Preservative Party, to create the Preservative Party, to preserve something for the future.
Ah, okay. Interesting use of language.
Yes, she ran. She made Oregon state history. She passed away a while back, but her philosophy I carry on through when we talk about politics in your show, really highlights things that people should think about as Americans, human beings of the earth, how we should all work together. And another campaign she came up with was before we make new laws, we should get rid of the obsolete laws first.
Not a bad idea.
Then she wanted to take law enforcement as her sheriff campaign and make it law encouragement. Law enforcement encourages violence. Law encouragement encourages peace.
Right, peaceful, lawful behavior. Mary, a great selection. Thank you for calling in and sharing that with us. David in Minneapolis, listening on KTNF. David, you have some thoughts on Higgins?
Hi. Yeah. Instinctually, what I've read regarding him wanting the drippies from the faucet in the tub is that cats kill and they instinctually think that the water around the kill is contaminated, and so they search for a different source of water. They also like the sound and the sight of the water coming out. We had a cat, Tommy, who was 17. We had to put him down, but he loved it. And Higgins is probably losing his sight and can't tell the water level in the dish visually, and so he has to stick his paw in there to figure it out. He thinks it might be contaminated, so he's not crazy, in my opinion, and he's not OCD. He's looking for a fresh source of water.
Well, that makes sense. I do have to give you a little backstory, though. When Higgins was a kid, our son rescued him from this frat house, and they locked him in a bathroom with a pit bull for the months of his kittenhood. I mean, he was a feral kitten that somebody had found on the street, and then they locked him in this bathroom with this pit bull. For fun, they used to throw him against the wall. They didn't feed him and they didn't give him water. And the only water he could get was standing underneath the faucet in the shower, waiting for the faucet to drip, which was continuously dripping, and that's how he got his water needs.
His life was contaminated except for the water from the faucet.
Yeah, well, he's been that way his whole life. See, we've got three cats, and the other two cats, they don't give a horse's patootie about where their water's coming from. They're just fine with a bowl of water. We did have one of those little things, a little fountain, a little kitty fountain, and the problem is one of our cats just loves to splash the water around and just soak the floor. But Higgins will sit and underneath the he has done this since he was a year old. He'll just sit in the shower and yell until you turn the water on, even whether he's thirsty or not. But I think you're right about him going blind.
you'd put your finger underneath there and then just drip the water down onto his face, and he just loved it. They like the sound and the sight of dripping water. They sense the freshness and the cleanness of it.
Yep.
Higgins is not nuts, but he's probably losing his sight as well, and
yeah.
doesn't address your thyroid, kidney problems or whatever else that you've
yeah,
got.
I think you're right, and I shouldn't call him nuts. Higgins is eccentric.
He seems kinky and eccentric,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, he thinks he's a pit bull too. He's up until the last year or so, every single person has come into our house and through the 15 years we've had him, he has attacked our oldest daughter. He stalks her. Anybody who comes in wearing a dress, he will stalk them. And
He's getting mellower though.
He's just in the last year, he's gotten mellower, but he still attacked somebody. Oh, the vet. Louise took him to the vet, a week and a half ago. And the vet was like, oh, it'll be no problem. You know, I'll just take him and reached out. And all of a sudden the vet's got, they had to go back and betadine his arms because Higgins took out the vet's arm. So, he's just, they had to knock him out. They had to give him ketamine and barbiturates before they could draw his blood. So he's still pretty, pretty feisty. David, thank you for the call. Thanks for the nice words about Higgins.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's also why Higgins will eat potato chips and pizza before he will eat fish or meat. Joker Charniev, by the way, the Boston bomber, the two brothers, one was killed, the other survived. He pled not guilty today in a Boston courtroom. He was arraigned. I'm actually looking forward to this trial. I would like to know what was going on inside this kid's head. This is pretty serious stuff. Killing people, maiming people, wounding people. And, what provokes that? I think the more that we can do to understand those kind of provocations, the more we can do to prevent this kind of thing. So, this is interesting. This just happened. Apparently, the Fed board has a battle going on about when to stop, pumping up our economy, basically. That's going to be an interesting one. And Apple was driving, it was in a criminal conspiracy to drive up ebook prices. Surprise, surprise. Jerry in Boonville, Indiana, listening on TomHartman.com. Hey, Jerry, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Great. What's on your mind?
I'm a resort worker for 25 years, and I'm out of a job now, and I'm competing against people from other countries for those jobs on HB1 visas. And the one thing that they're doing is that they're advertising these jobs off season for restaurants and things like that don't even open until winter, for like Rocky Mountain ski resorts. And traditionally you show up in October and you apply for your job. If you don't get the best job in town, you wind up in a hotel. Mm-hmm. But, the hotel's still a decent job. But those hotels now are advertising in the spring for closed restaurants that just open in the winter.
Are they doing that because they have to demonstrate to the INS that they're not able to find local employees before they can bring in the H-1B visa people?
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
Exactly. That's what they're doing. I called the Department of Labor, and they said that they have to advertise in the paper for 2 weeks, and if nobody applies, then they can hire somebody from overseas.
Right. And who's going to apply for a job 6 months before the job takes place?
Right. And the job's only 4 months long.
Right. Amazing.
So, and now it's not just them. It's the local bus company does it. The town government does it as well.
Amazing.
And it's all over the Rocky Mountain West. And so if you go into construction, you're competing against illegal employers.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't require language skills, gets done by, people from Mexico usually. And if you have language skills, they bring them over from Europe. Or Australia or New Zealand.
Yeah, this gets back to I wrote a whole chapter about this in Rebooting the American Dream. This gets back to my assertion, and I've been saying this since 86 when Reagan stopped enforcing the employer sanction provisions after his particular The Republicans call it an amnesty, call it immigration reform, whatever you want to call it. But we don't have an illegal immigrant problem in this country. We have an illegal employer problem in this country. And when some rich white guys do a perp walk because they're hiring and exploiting people, whether it's, you know, overseas labor or whether it's people who are in this country without documentation, then you're going to see a change. We need to go back to America first, you know, Americans for America. It's nuts. Jerry, thank you for the call. You're spot on. Excellent point. Teresa in Tipton, Indiana. Hey, Teresa, you are a teacher who worked at Walmart?
Yes, I am. I have a son in college, and I have had my pay cut for the past 5 years as a teacher, so I needed to take a job to try to pay his tuition without having to take out loans. So really the only place to work around here in some capacity like that is Walmart. Mm-hmm. So I have worked there for about 4 months, and it is a horrible place. All of the people who work there, with the exception of, like, upper management, are on food stamps. The women who work there who, you know, I mean, being a fellow woman, I would talk to a lot of them during breaks, and they have to have their children insured by Hoosier Healthwise, which is the Medicaid program. Basically, it's like Medicaid. It's an insurance program, and you can only qualify for if you have very low income.
Right.
But the thing that's amazing about this is Walmart doesn't just affect those people there. All the people at Walmart are very hardworking people. They're good people that really do work hard. But they just don't pay them. It is horrid what they do to them. Walmart absolutely hates public education. They hate unions with a passion. They indoctrinate their employees with constant computer videos that you have to participate in and watch, and you have to go through these, like, training things, and you watch them, and they'll tell you, like, you don't know this because you probably didn't learn this in your public school, but this is what we're going to teach you. They also, but the main point that I wanted to make is Walmart doesn't just destroy, like in D.C., that area. They suck the life out of a geographical region that is based usually on the number of population. Like where I live in a small rural town in Indiana. It's about 40 miles north of Indianapolis. And the Walmart that I worked in was in the town of Kokomo, which is a major manufacturing town.
Yeah, I've been there.
It's very Midwestern, very Michigan-type factory town. It's very similar to that. Anyway, my hometown is not where I live. It's another little town called Elwood, where Wendell L. Wilkie is from. And it is literally falling apart. And that's because people there have nowhere to work except for a place like Walmart.
Yeah.
And they can't afford anything except the gas to put in their car to get to work, to go make $8 an hour, and come back and get their food stamps and take their kids to the doctor on Medicaid.
Right.
And then to make it even worse, our horrible governor, Mike Pence, refuses to participate in any state developing state insurance exchange.
Yeah.
So these people will have no option. Walmart sucks the life out of our economy.
Yeah, you're right, Teresa. And as a teacher whose senior pay erode for the last 5 years, I'm waiting until Mike Pence says, oh, these terrible teachers, now it's time to give them guns. It's like, oh, it's incredible. Teresa, thank you for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Let's just add to their responsibilities. You're now in the armed guard here, too. Incredible. Welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Without getting into all the gory details, I just have to tell you, this city has the worst cabs in the world. I have never in my life. Occasionally you get a good cab driver. There's been some very nice ones, actually. But I've never in my life had such bad service so many times from so many cabs. And if you're coming to Washington, D.C., and you have a smartphone, check out Uber. This is absolutely unsolicited. I'm not getting a penny for this. But it's a service where limousine drivers who are, like, between jobs, you can communicate with them with your app, and for $15-16 for basically the cost of a cab fare plus maybe a few dollars extra, and you can put it on your, and it goes on your credit card and all this kind of stuff. They will come and pick you up wherever you are, and they will take you wherever you want to go, period. And the cab drivers in this city keep trying to put them out of business because the cab drivers don't take credit cards, by and large. Their service sucks. Half the cars are falling apart. I mean, it's just, it's mind-boggling. Anyhow, enough of my rant. We had, you know, Louise and I had an experience this just last weekend when we were trying to get that cat food for Higgins. We walked up to a cab and said, you know, we need to go to the PetSmart, which is down the street. We knew the address, but we didn't know where it was. And the driver says, oh, that's only a couple of blocks. You know, you can just walk it. And it turned out it was 10 blocks. And it was a really hot day. And it was like 50 pounds of cat food. And so when we finally got there, I mean, we kept thinking, okay, it's just going to be another block. I mean, the cab driver wouldn't lie to us, right? Wrong. So when we got there, we got the cat food. I pulled out my smartphone and I called Uber and said, come and get me. But anyhow, I was just talking with Louise. She just had another bad cab experience. Enough already. Be careful when you come to this town. UBER.com. You can check it out. Again, this is not a paid political or anything. I got no dog in this fight other than helping to save you some pain and inconvenience. Nancy in Tucson, Arizona. Hey, Nancy. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Hi, Tom. I was calling about Higgins.
Mm-hmm.
Higgins, we have a cat, Tigger, and she's had the same problem for four going on 5 years. It was diagnosed as her thyroid. We have a vet who specializes in cats. And because Tigger is 23 years old.
Wow.
She was diagnosed. Yeah, she was diagnosed 4 years ago. The vet said that when cats get beyond 10 or 12 years old, that doing the radiation treatment is not the best idea because it's incredibly stressful on their body, plus the fact that they're separated from you for that extended period of time is also another added stress.
Right.
So the food was not available in our vet's awareness at the time that Tigger was diagnosed, and we tried her on the medication first. She didn't like it. It didn't work well, and she was just yucky all the time. So when the food came out, she ate it for a while like your cat did. Then she kind of boycotted it, and we discovered that strained baby food turkey, just the turkey, not with anything in it, just the turkey with gravy. If you give them a dish of that, she, when she's feeling happy and healthy, she eats two jars of it a day, and we give her about a third of the measuring cup that comes with the crunchy iodine-free cat food from, I won't say the company, you know who they are.
Mm-hmm.
She will eat that also, and she once in a while will have an episode where she'll start vomiting again, she'll start to lose the weight again, and she'll get lethargic. What we do is we take her to the vet, and the vet gives her a steroid shot. It's called Depo, D-E-P-O. It will last with our cat anywhere from 6 months to a year.
Wow.
And the vet also taught me how to rehydrate her with an IV bag so that if there is an emergency on a weekend, because I don't trust any other vet with her.
Mm-hmm.
This vet's been taking care of her all this time, and she's really helped us out because we don't have a lot of money. So she's been really good to us, and I've kept my kitty happy for all this time. Again, she's going to be 24, and she's still okay.
That's wonderful.
For you and Higgins.
Yeah, well, thank you. So in summer, you take the low iodine cat, the low iodine dry cat food that the cats aren't so fond of, and you mix it up with the turkey baby
food.
No,
I don't mix it. She eats the turkey separate. But most cats enjoy that crunch feeling.
Right.
And so if all that they have is the slurpy, you know, turkey baby food,
right,
they want to chew on something.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So
then she eats the dry cat food.
Yes, she eats both. She eats about a third of a cup of the dry food and two jars. They're, I think they're either 2.5 ounce jars of turkey, the little tiny ones for the new babies. It's strained, and basically it's just turkey, water, and cornstarch.
They put salt in it, don't they? Are you concerned that the salt has been iodized?
There is no salt in it.
There is no salt. Oh, so you get sodium-free.
They don't put salt in that baby food.
That is great.
The brand that I use, read the label.
Yeah. Okay.
Read your labels. Yes, and it's a major brand that's at all the grocery stores. So
great. So
it's not hard to find. But
Nancy, I'm going to hit the Safeway on the way home tonight.
The place to get it. Yeah. At Higgins' age, I wouldn't recommend the separation and the stress that the radiation would put on his body.
Yeah, I was thinking about that, too, leaving him in a cage for 7 days, particularly the way he gets around anybody other than us.
Right.
Yeah.
And it sounds like they would always be having to sedate him for that period of time to even be able to work, you know, deal with him, to be able to do the things that he needed done, and that would not be good either.
Yeah, they had to give him, when we got the bill and looked at it, gave him ketamine, which it turns out was not the drug that killed Michael Jackson. I was wrong on that, but it's a paralytic, you know, it's they use it for surgery, and they gave him a barbiturate, and they gave him a benzodiazepine drug, a Valium family drug, all three of them at the same time. And he was just, like, so knocked out. And that's what they had to do in order to be able to just take a little blood out of him. And I mean, now Louise and I are trying to give him the pill. And he's figured out, you know, when the fingers are coming for the jaw hinge of his jaw, he's like, uh-oh.
There's another medication available, Tom. It's it comes in a pen dispenser, and you rub it inside their ear. It's an applicator. It needs to be done at a compounding pharmacy, but there are ones that you can do by mail order.
Oh, that's interesting.
Ask your vet about that one. They take a lot better to the one.
Yeah, we just ordered some pill pouches. You know about these?
They don't work.
They don't work,
If your cat's as feisty as he sounds, he's going to be like Tigger, and he's going to just spit it out because the pill pouch doesn't disguise the I think it's, I forget the name, the...
Greenies makes a bunch of them. Yeah.
Yeah, they do. They do. And the cats like them if you don't put drugs in them.
Yeah, okay. Well, there'll be treats for the other cats then. All right. Nancy, thank you for the information.
But I think, you know, be conservative with your treatment with Higgins. Give him time. I'm not quite sure when the problem first arose or when it was diagnosed, but it took us almost a year to get Tigger stabilized and happy.
Yeah, he's been getting worse for, I would say, 3 months. But he's just been throwing up regularly.
Well, the Depo shots are really good for that. It stops the vomiting and it increases their appetite.
Okay, I'll check it out.
It's not something that you want to have to bring them in for often because it can push them into being diabetic.
Right.
But once a cat gets to be above 15 years old, they're probably going to choose to leave the planet before they would develop diabetes from getting the steroid shot if you're conservative with it.
Okay. Nancy, thank you for an extraordinary amount of great and useful information. And thank you for calling and for watching Free Speech TV. Thank you, Nancy. Much appreciated. Dave in Mount Pleasant, Michigan. Hey, Dave, you wanted to rebut Karl Rove's new anti-Obamacare ad, the new...
Yeah, darn smart phone. Yeah, it's not too smart and hung up on me, didn't it? Anyway, one of the points that the lady on the ad made was, I don't know if I will be able to choose my doctor. Well, I'll tell you what. I've got a really good healthcare package where I work, and I've got what they call a PPO.
Right.
My wife needs back surgery. The neurosurgeon that we want to choose is not in our little circle. So guess what?
You can't choose your doctor right now.
Either.
Right.
Right.
Exactly. Most Americans can't, actually. Most Americans have a limited range of doctors that they can choose from. And already. man. It's amazing. It's like the misinformation that comes out of these guys just, and it's not like they're trying to make America a better place. It's not like they're trying to make sure that more people are insured. It's not like they're trying to have a better program. It's not even like they're trying to make more profits on health insurance. I mean, the health insurance companies are doing that just fine. You got UnitedHealthcare, whose CEO has made over $1 billion. Instead, it's they're trying to take down Obama. It's like, you know, holy cow, there's a black guy in the White House. We can't have this. Or holy cow, it's a Democrat, you know, like Bill Clinton. We got to impeach him about something. What? The Whitewater, Rose Law Firm. Vince Foster, Hillary must have killed him. There's got to be something. And now Daryl Issa. Oh, Benghazi. Come on.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And while the Republicans are doing all this nonsense, and that's a word you can say on the radio, they're letting the rates, student loan rates, double? Really? Hey, a major, this may turn out to be a major, major big deal. So far, it's a big deal. The Electronic Frontier Foundation has been trying to, well, actually, let's get Trevor Tim on, and he can tell us all about it. He's an activist and blogger with the Electronic Freedom Foundation. EFF.org is their website. He's also the director of the Freedom of the Press Foundation. Trevor, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So up to this point, what had you all been trying to do that the government had been thwarting your efforts, and how?
Well, for about 6 years now, we've been suing over NSA warrantless wiretapping. You know, this kind of started back in the Bush administration, back in 2005, the New York Times, won the Pulitzer Prize for revealing that the Bush administration had been illegally warrantlessly wiretapping American citizens with the help of telecommunications companies like AT&T.
Right.
So we filed one lawsuit, the government against AT&T, and the government passed a law that actually gave the telecom companies retroactive immunity. And so they actually passed this law specifically because of our lawsuit. And so that ended that, but then we decided to sue the NSA directly over this program, saying that it violated people's privacy, their First Amendment and Fourth Amendment rights. And up until now, they've been actually arguing, despite the fact that it's been in all major papers, that it was protected by the state secrets privilege, which is this controversial legal maneuver where basically they're saying that even if all of the allegations in our lawsuit are true and that the government has violated the Constitution, the judge should dismiss it before hearing the evidence anyways, because it might hurt national security. But thankfully, because of these additional releases, the government has been admitting more of this.
You're talking about Ed Snowden's stuff.
Yes, exactly. Edward Snowden's revelations from the past month have really confirmed all of the allegations that we've been making for the past few years. And so a judge just ruled this week, actually, that the government could not use this state secrets privilege to prevent our lawsuit from going.
Because it's not a secret anymore, because Ed Snowden spilled the beans.
Exactly. So we might finally get some an answer as to whether these programs are unconstitutional or not, which the government has been trying to block for 6 years now.
That's remarkable. So what kind of judge at what sort of court just tentatively ruled in your favor here?
So this is the district court in Northern California, where EFF is based in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure
this is part of the Ninth Circuit?
Yeah, part of the Ninth Circuit, and I'm sure the government may appeal to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. So, I mean, there's still a large battle in front of us.
Right. They'll appeal it to the full Ninth Circuit, and then if you win there, they'll appeal it to the Supreme Court.
Exactly. We're probably looking at, if we were to win this case eventually outright, we're probably looking at two trips back and forth to the Supreme Court. So, you know, it was a small step, but it was definitely a huge step in the right direction.
And it also tells us the value of whistleblowers in letting us know what's going on. I mean, we have I have yet to see any evidence, and I don't think that anybody has presented any evidence that's convincing. And in fact, several members of Congress have essentially said the same thing, that Ed Snowden has compromised national security. He might have embarrassed the administration and some of the agencies involved. But what he did do is which is what he said he was setting out to do, is he has helped create a more transparent government. And you guys are living proof of that.
Exactly. You know, it can't be emphasized enough how much we've learned beyond what Edward Snowden leaks have shown us. You know, his leaks have shown us what they've actually been doing, and they've been very helpful for our lawsuit. But just the response to the leaks, that the government had to start admitting additional information, that companies now have to start being more transparent as well, and that now the secret FISA court, which issues all of these surveillance rulings, now has to be is hopefully going to start publicly releasing all of these secret surveillance opinions that kind of reinterpret the Fourth Amendment. You know, the Obama administration.
Really?
Yes, I mean that's the hope. We've had a lawsuit involving the Freedom of Information Act trying to get these opinions released, or at least summaries of these opinions.
Have you been able to find out even where the secret FISA court meets or who's on that court?
Yeah, actually, EFF was the first organization to have a public motion filed in the FISA court. This happened just a few months ago. And ever since, there have been now a few companies have done so. The ACLU has done so. And so, you know, finally this huge national security secrecy apparatus is starting to show some cracks. And, you know, obviously, you know, what we're asking for is just simple transparency and nothing radical. The idea that the government can hold secret interpretations of public laws and can secretly interpret the Constitution in a way that affects all of us, yet only a very, very small percentage of the people can actually read these opinions, is kind of the opposite of democracy, and that's what we're really trying to fix here.
Quite. Has the Supreme Court ever ruled on FISA courts?
No. So, you know, the FISA court was set up in the late 1970s, and basically it complied with the Fourth Amendment. All it did was it allowed the government to go before it, and they would approve or deny specific wiretap requests.
Right.
And so in 2008, when the FISA Amendments Act passed, this was in response to the Bush's warrantless wiretapping program. Instead of fixing the problems, what it did was expand them exponentially. And so now the court approves these broad surveillance orders that affect everybody, and they're allowed to reinterpret the Fourth Amendment, and this is done all in secret. You know, there's no opposing side to the government when the government makes their argument.
But isn't that the sole province of the Supreme Court? I mean, assuming that I'm not a fan of judicial review, and I think Marbury was wrongly decided, but nonetheless, isn't interpreting the Constitution the sole province of the Supreme Court? Any lower court that does that, it should be appealable to the Supreme Court?
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's the problem here. There's no real mechanism to appeal to the Supreme Court. The Chief Justice, John Roberts, is the only person that nominates FISA court judges. Obviously, John Roberts has a lifetime term, so he's going to be, if there's one person that is affecting surveillance law right now, more than anybody, it's probably John Roberts, and he's going to be doing this for decades. You know,
he's a young guy.
So, you know, even if people trust President Obama because they voted for him and they like him and they think he's a competent person, remember that it's the Republican John Roberts who is making the ultimate decisions here, because he's the one that.
Amazing.
You're listening
Trevor,
to Tom Thank Hartman.
You. Trevor Tim, EFF.org. Check it out.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Georgia looks like it's getting ready to execute a mentally disabled. The word at law is retarded, although more often than not people consider that to be a slur. But that is the legal term. And Josh Marquis is a district attorney with Clatsop County, Oregon, past president of the Oregon District Attorneys Association. Are you the current DA there, sir?
I have been for 20 years, yes.
Okay. So, and the website is coastda.com. And Josh, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Tom.
So you are, if I understand this correctly, you consider yourself a relatively progressive Democrat, and you're in favor of the death penalty.
I'm in favor of the death penalty
in some cases, as are approximately, depending on how you ask the question, between 65 and 80% of all Americans. And interestingly, when you ask people their political persuasion, those people who describe themselves as liberals, it's about 62% of people who are self-described as liberals. The question is, are you for the death penalty ever, or are you for the death penalty generally? And frankly, you get different answers because, a number of people, including people who, like me, think the death penalty is probably overused, not in the sense that there are, we believe, innocent people on death row, but frankly, that some of the cases in some states, we in Oregon simply would not ask for the death penalty for what we refer to as a 7-Eleven murder, which is, I'm not trying to denigrate the crime, but when you have, you know, some young people who go in with a gun, they rob a convenience mart, they panic, they shoot and kill the owner. That's a horrible crime, but absent something really awful, that generally should not warrant a death penalty.
Right. In your mind, the death penalty is reserved for people like Charlie Manson.
Well, yeah, Charlie Manson or Randy Guzik, who I prosecuted no less than 3 times in 20 years. He has an IQ of 150, by the way, and he was a star student at Redmond High School, and he brutally planned and executed 2 lovely people. And there's never been any question about his guilt. We just keep having to retry the case over and over again.
Why?
So, but you're here. You want to talk about Mr. Hill, I believe.
Well, yeah, he kind of brought this issue up. The charge or the suggestion is that he's mentally retarded, using
right.
the
legal term.
And I know
that people call that the R word, but frankly, in the context of the Atkins case, which was a U.S. Supreme Court case of about, I think, 6 years ago, which ruled that a person who was genuinely mentally retarded could not be executed.
Right.
The problem, of course, is then how do you define that? Generally speaking,
and the court left that to the states.
They did, and for example, Oregon, my state, and I think yours, has as yet to come up with a clear definition, and not only a definition, but who makes the decision. In some
right.
states, for example, there's a preliminary hearing at which a judge takes expert testimony and makes a decision, and if he finds or she finds that the person who's facing the death penalty is in fact mentally retarded, then the death penalty is taken off the table. In other cases, like actually, interestingly, Mr. Atkins, the case who brought it was from Virginia, and after his case was overturned, the case went back for trial. A jury found that specifically that Mr. Atkins was not retarded, and sentenced him to death again. The case got overturned on completely different grounds. So Georgia does have an unusual feature, which is they create what's called an affirmative defense, which is not as infrequent, which means the burden is shifted to the defendant. So in Georgia, a defendant who is otherwise deemed execution eligible must prove beyond a reasonable doubt that he's not retarded.
That he's not execution eligible, not that he's not guilty, but that he's not
right.
Mentally competent.
And one of the points I think that needs to be made is there is really no question about Warren Hill's actual guilt.
Right.
His lawyers haven't raised it. The sole issue is he in fact, you know, mentally incapable?
Right.
And our law has always intended, and I think I agree, it's simple decency, that you don't execute people who are either so insane they think they shot Hitler, not their wife, or they think they're squeezing a lemon instead of somebody's throat.
Right.
That's what we would call delusional or psychosis.
Well, here's my problem with the death penalty, and that is that most developed mature democracies no longer have the death penalty.
Well, do you consider Japan and India a developed mature democracy?
Well, India, I'm not sure of. Japan, certainly I do. And I realize that they have the death penalty there. But they're the exception that proves the rule, if anything. And my concern is, what about the killers of the killers? Would you be willing to personally execute the fellow that you prosecuted?
Yes. And I believe...
And you don't... It seems to me like you'd almost have to be a sociopath not to have difficulty sleeping after taking another person's life, even if you feel it's justified.
Well,
Tom, I have been a prosecutor for 30 years. I have the unusual experience of having also been a lead capital defense lawyer. So I've been on both sides of the table, which very few people have. And in my career, I've done a couple dozen murder cases. I have only had two people for whom I stood in front of juries and asked them to put them to death. And let's make no mistake, when I do that, my moral responsibility is undeniable. I am the prosecutor. I'm the person making that decision. And if that person were ever to be executed, I believe it would be my duty, not something I'm particularly looking forward to go to their execution. Now, you have to understand that I firmly believe that the man who's been sentenced to death unanimously by four Oregon juries, Mr. Guzik, will probably outlive me. But let's assume that was not the case. Let's assume that, in fact, he were to be executed. I would feel it my moral responsibility to be there. I would not find it a pleasant experience. But and jurors, for example, a common defense argument is, can you live with yourselves knowing that you are, in fact, condemning someone to death?
Yeah, I would not be able to.
Well, and Tom, you've just basically sort of delineated it. If, in fact, and there are my own parents, certainly my father, who was a refugee from Nazi Germany, who was a college professor, who fought as an infantryman in World War II, my father was against the death penalty, bitterly so, and he was very unhappy when he saw my name frequently quoted in the New York Times as a supporter of capital punishment. Now, my parents weren't religious. My mother's still alive, and she doesn't like the fact that, now, in other words, they have philosophical beliefs probably very similar to yours. Then there are people with religious beliefs. Even though the actual translation of the King James Bible from Greek is not "thou shalt not kill," it's "thou shalt not murder," there are many people, particularly in the Catholic faith, who believe the death penalty is wrong. If, in fact, you believe the death penalty is wrong, there is no amount of reform, no amount of carefulness, and correct me if I'm wrong, that we could use or apply that would make you okay with it.
But that's true. And I look at, you know, it's fairly clear right now that Rick Perry executed an innocent man, you know, a year and a half ago.
Well, I know you're talking about the arson case involving Mr. Williams.
Yeah, and it's also fairly likely that George W. Bush executed at least one innocent man. I mean, there's that argument, and I realize that in many cases there's just no doubt about it. But still, it's like, do we as a society really want to be that brutal?
You can look back. I paid a pilgrimage 4 years ago to the Nuremberg, Germany, which has deeply resonance to my family because I didn't know them because they were my great granduncles, but people in the camp,
right,
the concentration camp. And I, if you're a student of World War II and you look at the absolutely cosmic evil,
Josh, hold on for just a second. We'll hang on just a second.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We're talking with Josh Marquis, the district attorney in Clatsop County, Oregon, about the death penalty. CoastDA.com is his website. Josh, hang on. Welcome back. 20 minutes past the hour. Just to recap my arguments against the death penalty. Number one, if you're saying that it's punishment, I think that life imprisonment is a worse punishment than turning the lights off for somebody. Number two, I wouldn't want to say, yes, this person will die, but I'm not going to do it. Somebody else is going to do it. It's one of the reasons why I respect hunters who kill the food that they eat, and I have very little respect for people who eat meat in restaurants or from the supermarket, and why I'm a vegetarian, because I'm not willing to kill my own food, although I'll tell you, if it was survival, I probably would. So, you know, it's like we all have to draw our own personal lines, but I'm not willing to say as a member of society that I'm going to pay some poor schlub who works in a prison to drag some guy yelling and screaming down the hall, strap him into a chair and kill him. And I think that the impact on the executioners is something that I don't want to live with either. And number three, I don't think that there has ever been a really good, competent study that shows that the death penalty actually is a deterrent. And so That's the basis of my opposition to it. But I understand Josh's point, and I respect his perspective. And the fact of the matter is that various societies, various small-d democracies, have at different times throughout the history of the modern era, the last couple of centuries, have decided whether or not to have death penalties. And the United States and Japan still have a death penalty. Virtually all the countries of Europe don't. And it's just, you know, it's going to be a matter of a critical mass. So, but it's anything goes summer, so we can talk about anything else you'd like as well. But I thought that was an interesting one. And down in Georgia, they're going to pull a switch on this guy, apparently, who he and his lawyers are saying, sorry, his mental capacity was not good enough. He was not smart enough to really understand what he was all about or what he was up to. And that the Supreme Court has said you can't execute somebody who has that diminished capacity, who is, to use the term the Supreme Court used, mentally retarded. Mike in Vail, Arizona. Hey, Mike, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, thanks for taking my call. And by the way, thank you also for offering a little piece of sanity for all of us that are looking for one of those.
You're welcome.
It's good good radio, and
thank you.
Appreciate it very much. You know, I've got two quick points, and they're related to each other. But, you know, the other day we had a group of people over for a barbecue, and we're talking about role models. And we're talking about, gosh, you know, in today's world, you know, where do you point when you're talking to your kids or your grandkids and say, you know what, I'd like you to grow up just like this guy or this gal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the reaction for the group, Tom, was, gosh, you know, they had to think about it. And finally, I just said, you know, I think the media has skewered this a little bit. You know, it's not the athletes. It's not the rich millionaires and billionaires. They're all around us. They're teachers. They're nurses. They're caregivers. They're people who are selfless. And it kind of rolls into my next point, which is, you know, I think, you know, Bradley Manning, the Snowden and Assange, these are true patriots. And Tom, can you imagine the impact of, you know, if we promoted and create a reward system for turning in bad corporate behavior, and if we really protected, you know, the whistleblowers and you know, kind of use it as a stimulus,
yeah,
if you will. You know, it would happen almost overnight, Tom, and I think it would scare a lot of the perps, the borderline perps, if you will, into maybe even offering up, others and showing the American people how they get away with
or into good behavior. You know, we do this with taxes. If you turn in somebody that you know is cheating on their taxes, you get a bounty, basically, a reward. And very few people cheat on their taxes as a consequence of that.
Yeah, and I just don't see that today's whistleblower protection as being meaningful and real.
Agreed.
It looks like it's a hollowed-out bill to me. And,
agreed.
And I think if we wanted to have a huge impact immediately, we should look at the whistleblower program and promote it aggressively.
Yeah, I agree. And also, you know, it's interesting. Pre-Reagan, I think it was National Scholastic, you know, one of those magazines that used to be in the schools all the time. They would always ask every year, maybe it was Parade magazine. It's been a few years since I read the article about it. But they would always, every year they would ask kids, who do you want to be when you grow up? And pre-Reagan, the answer was almost always, I want to be President of the United States or somebody like the President of the United States. Or who's your role model? Abraham Lincoln, Thomas Jefferson, George Washington. You know, one of the presidents. And post-Reagan, it started becoming billionaires. I want to grow up to be like Bill Gates. And now I think increasingly people are seeing how the billionaires have screwed us and the politicians are in the pockets of the billionaires and the whole system has been corrupted by money on both sides. And I think you're absolutely right. Who has left the caregivers, the teachers, the people who are working in the hospitals? And
Again, people who do things not for themselves, they're selfless.
Yeah. Yeah,
and you know, I think the whole world looks back on, and certainly through animism, you know, God looks back as through all living creatures and beings. So
yes.
It just makes all the sense in the world to me.
Yeah, I agree. We went back to Portland last month. Our oldest daughter graduated with her degree as a nurse practitioner. sort of like the master's degree of nursing, and sure. You know, she can open a practice now. She's got her boards actually, I think today, and anyway, she's we were there for her graduation, and we met a whole bunch of her friends who were in her class. What an extraordinary group of young people, you know, who were. It wasn't the kind of, you know, the rah-rah hubris that you would expect from a business school graduating class. And they were giving awards for the people who had done the most good during their time in school, who had helped people out. I mean, they literally had awards for this, for people who had volunteered the most in the hospices and people who were... It was just extraordinary. It was a marvelous, marvelous experience. Mike, thank you for the call. I think you're spot on. Spot on. We'll be right back. It's 25 minutes, 27 minutes past the hour. Coming up on 28 minutes past the hour here on the Tom Hartman Program. Anything goes summer on this Wednesday.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And you can drop into our free live chat room over at TomHartman.com. It's a hoot. You'll meet some of the finest minds in the world. Crurophilously ugly, the good, Seth Collins. When Seth's brother Aaron passed away last year, he had only one request, that his brother, quote, leave an awesome tip, around $500, to a waiter or waitress. Seth has taken his brother up on his request and then some. He's now going on a road trip throughout all 50 states, surprising servers all over the country with random acts of generosity. Good work, Seth. Your brother would be proud. The bad. The Obama administration. According to a new report from McClatchy, the Obama administration has started a new policy in the wake of Bradley Manning's leak of thousands of documents to WikiLeaks to weed out other potential leakers. The program, codenamed Insider Threat, encourages, quote, federal employees to report suspicious actions on their colleagues based on behavioral profiling, end quote. Those who don't report their coworkers can face punishment. Sounds bad, right? Right? Here's the worst part. According to McClatchy, there's no proof such profiling techniques actually work. So there you have it. The most transparent administration in history is pushing McCarthyism on its employees, even though there's no reason to believe that it will keep our secrets any safer. Isn't that just great? And the very, very ugly, The Five. On yesterday's episode of The Five, host Bob Beckel proclaimed that he didn't want any more mosques built in America without a thorough investigation beforehand to make sure potential mosque goers weren't terrorists. His fellow hosts applauded his remarks. Check it out.
If it were up to me, I would not have another mosque built in this country until we got it worked out who was not a terrorist. And by the way,
there we go.
Has somebody out there, is any Muslim out there, any Muslim cleric, any Muslim leader said anything about this? No, you're cowardly. Because you're afraid they're going to put a, what I call a fatwa on you. Well, fatwa this.
Put her there. Yeah.
I don't know what's worse, that Bob Beckel actually believes it's a good idea, or that the rest of his Fox so-called news buddies high-fived his Islamophobia. That is just very, very ugly.
That's incredibly ugly.
Oh, my. What a day. What a day. Patsy, in Pismo Beach, California, you have a comment about Higgins?
Yes, I have a ninja warrior cat like Higgins named Benny.
Mm-hmm.
And 3 years ago, he came down with a thyroid condition. And he's like impossible. He's like Higgins that he has to be put under anytime they have to do a procedure on him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's impossible to give pills to. But I've successfully been doing that ear gel thing that another lady talked about with him for 3 years now.
Oh, really?
And he's And I know you probably don't want me to tell you what the medication is.
No, feel free. That's okay.
Okay, it's called, it's got a long name here, methamazidole or something like that.
Okay, that sounds like one of the diuretics. Well, who knows? I shouldn't play pharmacist.
Methamazole, yeah. and he gets 25 milligrams in a year every day with a little treat. And he doesn't mind it at all with, you know, for an aggressive cat like him. I mean, he sent me to the emergency room before,
right,
when he's like,
so, you know, is this ear gel stuff, is it like dimethyl sulfoxide? Is it something that DMSO that just transports the drug across the skin barrier,
yeah,
into the bloodstream? Or is,
yeah,
it something you put on the ear and the cat likes it enough that they lick it off and they clean their paws and they end up ingesting it that way?
I think it's a little of both. At first, he used to lick his paws, but now he just, you know, he ignores it. And I give it to him every day. And like I said, I do it with a little treat. And sometimes I forget to do it, and he reminds me.
Huh.
He comes to tell me.
Because he wants the treat. And he doesn't mind,
yeah,
the stuff in his ear.
No.
Well, that's interesting. I had never heard of that. So the ear gel is a delivery technique that can be used for a variety of drugs, is that right? Or is it just that this particular thyroid drug for cats comes in this way?
There's some drugs I've not been able to get in the gel because it's a compound that you have to get, like, from a specialized pharmacy.
Right.
But it's not that expensive. It costs me $25 a month, you know, under that.
Right.
So
I'll bet.
There are some,
do you know if it's, yeah, if it's DMSO that's in the gel? Is that the agent?
Yeah, right. And you put it in a little rubber, you know, thing on your finger because you don't want to deliver it to yourself.
Right.
Because it's absorbed through the skin, but, you know.
Right.
But he's been fine with it, and I can give him anything to eat because he's a cat. I live in the country, and he's a cat who will go out and eat mice and, you know, whatever,
right,
whether, you know, I'm feeding him to or not. So, you know, he's fussy. He just doesn't want to eat any diet food. He's going to tell you what he's going to,
yeah,
eat.
Yeah. Fascinating. Fascinating. Patsy, I got to move along, but thank you for the call. Thanks for the tip. Now we've got a whole brand new conversation to have with our vet. That's a good one. I appreciate it. David in Chicago, listening to WCPT. Hey, David, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I wanted to address the issue that the guy from Colorado came on and seasonal workers, but very quickly first, when you have 20% of people who are innocent on death row in Illinois and George Ryan has to suspend the death penalty, you know there's a problem with that issue. And for whatever his faults were, he went to prison for corruption, he did the absolute right thing. So 20%, it's unacceptable when you're condemning somebody to
1/100th of 1% is unacceptable.
Right, but I mean 20%, it was boggling.
Yeah.
We found out. But getting back to the guest worker issue, the gentleman should know that more than likely the seasonal workers coming in Colorado will be coming in on the H-2B or the J visa. And if you add H-1B and H-2B and J visas, in 2012, 361,000 foreign workers just on those three programs flooding into our country.
Wow.
And the reason that this is able – and those are just three programs. And the J visa has been as high as over 300,000 in 2008. And these are the J visas used for young people who want to come over here during the summer and work as sort of a cultural exchange. But there was a huge scandal with McDonald's in Pennsylvania and the Hershey's factory in Pennsylvania last year or the year before.
Hmm.
But the way these laws are written, and they're written by immigration lawyers, it says in the Department of Labor strategic plan, H-1B workers may be hired even when a qualified U.S. worker wants the job, and a U.S. worker can be displaced from the job in favor of the foreign worker. The immigration lawyer lobby deliberately writes in these loopholes so that Americans can be legally displaced. And if you need any further clarification, Joel Stewart, who's an immigration lawyer, blogged in April of 2000, even in a depressed economy, employers who favor aliens have an arsenal of legal means to reject all U.S. workers who apply. This is the problem with lobbyists. And basically what we see here is corporate human trafficking. So people like Zoe Lofgren, who is an immigration lawyer and now is on the House Subcommittee on Immigration, she basically made her living corporate human trafficking because she gets paid so many thousands of dollars per visa processed. So this is the 21st century version of corporate human trafficking, pimping in cheap foreign labor, dumping cheap foreign labor the way that steel was dumped in the 1980s.
Amazing.
And these two bills right now that are out of the Senate and the House, S-744, if that bill gets passed, Tom, 33 million new foreign workers will flood into the country in the next 10 years, triple the number of H-1Bs. And every foreign student...
Are you talking about the immigration bill?
Yes, the F-744 that got passed out of the Senate.
Right.
And the green card provision is even more insidious.
Right.
Because
Bernie's been complaining about it loudly on this program.
He did vote for it, but here's the thing. Here's the thing. If a foreign student can come up with one to buy essentially a master's degree, they will short-circuit the labor market for experienced tech workers like myself and younger American grads who need a good-paying job to pay off those student loans because they cannot get the green card unless they accept the offer. Companies will know this. They'll make them a lowball offer. The foreign students will jump at that, undercutting the labor market, short-circuiting it for young grads and for older experienced people who, by their experience, should get paid more than a cheap foreign labor recent grad.
Yeah.
And this is why this green card provision in S-744 is so insidious, and it'll largely destroy the STEM workforce opportunities for Americans in our own country.
This is Reaganomics on steroids. I mean, this is the absolute race to the bottom.
Well, Tom, the thing is, I talked to Chris Van Hollerin about 3 years ago, and he said, there's protections for Americans for the H-1B. And it's not, Chris. I mean, law allows Americans to be displaced. And the green card process to sponsor an H-1B to a green card, the PERM process, it's got as many loopholes.
Right.
That you can drive a truck.
You know, one of the big groups pushing this stuff, David, I don't know if the lawyer lobby has, you know, what's the old saying, a pot to pee in or something. That's nothing compared to Silicon Valley. You've got the really big money behind this kind of stuff is the big tech companies out on the West Coast who want to be able to import engineers from India.
Zuckerberg's FWD new lobby, you know, they're trying to, you know, pretend it's not a big deal. But right now, in California alone, there are over 65,000 H-1B workers, according to the Eagleton Institute out of Rutgers University. And in Colorado, over 2,700 H-1B workers.
Yeah, you're making my point. David, thank you for the call. And this is an important issue people should be paying attention to. And, you know, it's another example of how the corporatization of America is destroying the middle class.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Reagan came in and said, America's bad, government is bad, corporations are good. Anything corporations do, that's, you know, greed is good. Here we are. Oh, this is an interesting headline over at Raw Story. Aussie expert legalized marijuana to protect teens from binge drinking. This is the director of Australia's Alcohol Policy Research Body. Makes perfect sense to me. You know, protect our kids. Legalize pot. Alan in San Francisco. Hey, Alan, what's up?
Yeah, hi, Tom. I'm calling about the comment that you made earlier about Uber in Washington, D.C.
Yes.
I'm a cab driver in San Francisco.
San Francisco has great cabs.
Thank you. This is why I'm calling.
That's why I said I have never in my life experienced anything like here in Washington D.C. The cab drivers are rude. Their cars are in terrible shape. They will not take credit cards. I have had my Louise when she was getting her cancer treatments. It was just over the border in Maryland and out of the district. And so once you're over the border, you can't pick up a fare to bring them back in. She twice going to a cancer treatment. Got in a cab. The cab driver takes her a couple of blocks. By the time she says, I'm going to this place in Maryland, they say, that's it. Pull over and literally threw her out of the cab.
Oh, I'm really sorry to hear that. Many of my passengers are cancer patients. The American Cancer Society has a program here in which they pay for people's transportation to and from their cancer treatments.
Yeah.
And the reason I'm calling is because we've been besieged by different alternative transportation services, including Uber. Mm. And I just wanted to make it clear to people who might be thinking about coming to San Francisco or who are living here now and listening to your show that you're talking about Washington, D.C. cab drivers, but in San Francisco, Uber is not a preferable alternative transportation service to the San Francisco taxi cab industry. We are fantastic. We're professional, community-oriented,
You are?
Many of my passengers, yeah, many of my passengers are cancer patients, people going to and from doctor's offices. I spend a great part of my day. I feel at the end of the day a real sense of accomplishment for having contributed to the community. It's not, so I just wanted to get that out there. And I want to say I'm a huge Tom Hartman fan. I'm a huge fan of your show, you know.
Thank you.
And that's why I happened to be listening when I heard you make that comment.
Yeah, Hartman. Thank you. This is not a blanket statement. In fact, I've used Uber in some of the other cities that they're available in, Los Angeles and Chicago, and discovered that they're a whole lot more expensive than the cabs, and the cabs are just fine. So I'm not here to promote Uber. But in Washington, D.C., I'll promote anything other than a cab. I mean, it happened again to Louise today, which is what, you know, I was on the phone with her, and she was telling me about it. And I don't want to tell the whole story. She said, don't, you know, I don't want to be anybody's victim on the air, but I was just pissed off. Pardon me.
I completely understand, and I got that, the distinction. I just felt it was my duty to try to get that out there.
Well, good on you. Good on you, Alan. And thank you for the call, and thanks for being a good cab driver in San Francisco. You've got a great city that you live in. I love San Francisco.
Oh,
cabs are excellent in San Francisco. Joan in South Portland, Maine. Hey, Joan, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. I just have a quick question.
Mm-hmm.
I've often wondered, what about changing the term whistleblower to truth teller?
Yeah, that's a good one.
That's it?
Well, that's brilliant, Joan, because whistleblowers generally are truth tellers, and we should pass a law and start, you know, say, instead of calling it a whistleblower act, call it a truth teller act. Although I think whistleblower is a pretty positive phrase anyway, which is why most of the corporate media in America is referring to Ed Snowden as a leaker rather than a whistleblower.
Yeah, I think disagree. Every time I have a conversation with someone about a whistleblower,
mm-hmm.
there's a sense of denigration about the person who is the whistleblower.
Yeah. Well, I like your truth teller meme. Let's promote that more. Joan, thank you for the call. Excellent one. Cora in Taos, New Mexico, listening on KVOT. Hey, Cora, what's up?
Today's New York Times published an article about a man who defied his government. And it was happened during World War II.
Mm-hmm.
Aristides de Souza Mendes was Portugal's consul in Bordeaux. And, Tom, this man saved 30,000 people by providing them with a visa to escape the Nazis.
Right.
And, you know, once the government found out, they recalled him, they tried him, and they dismissed him from the diplomatic service. And then he died in poverty because they took away his pension. So I would say there's somebody who defied his government.
Mm-hmm.
He was a Roman Catholic. He had 15 children of his own.
Whoa.
And this man risked it all.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so good on him. Was he in the New York Times because he died?
Yes.
Is it an obituary?
Well, no, he was being honored. And basically Portugal says they hadn't remembered him because they haven't been a democratic country for that long, they said.
Yeah. Well, Portugal's had a few ups and downs over the years. But
yeah,
thank you.
Anyway, I just thought it was interesting, and he should be remembered.
Well, and you did a great job.
A lot of lives.
Cora, thank you for sharing that with us, and thanks for the call. Billy in Burnsville, North Carolina. Hey, Billy, what's on your mind?
Not much, Tom. I'm an avid fan of yours, but I got wind here of the little Fox News at the edge of South Carolina where Duke Energy has been giving their political contributions and handing it back to our customers. So, and I've worked powerhouses and shutdowns and stuff, and it is really, it's a farce. I mean, they'll overrun the job with people, and it's crazy, you know. And
so Duke Energy, I don't understand, Billy. What is it that you're suggesting that they're doing?
They're taking where they do a political contribution.
Right.
And for, I don't know ever how, Fox, it won't give you much details. On it's just one little glimpse.
Sure.
But their political contribution, they're passing it on to the customers.
Oh, I see. So, in other words, they're raising their rates to you as a consumer of their electricity in order to make enough money that they can pass that money off to some corrupt politician.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay, I got it.
Fox is in their pockets, you know.
Yep.
And you get just a glimpse.
Yep.
And that's it.
Yep. Surprise.
I really enjoy your show. I've been, you know, been interested in it. And my family, I said, well, that's the only station you can get the truth.
Okay, Billy, thank you. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. Thanks for the call. And don't forget, democracy begins when you show up. We'll see you tomorrow here. In the meantime, check out Move to amend.org. Check out Progressive Democrats of America, pdamerica.org. Go over to free-don.com and get educated about what's going on, or free-don.org, about what's going on with Don Siegelman. I mean, there's some great groups, some great organizations, and some real outrage in this country. So get out there and occupy something. Tag your it. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.